Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We want our girls back, and we want them back now. We want this terrorist group brought to justice, and we want the slaughter and the intimidation, the trafficking, the murders. We want this stopped today.
Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, as America and the world are now intently focused on more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped by the radical Islamist group Boko Haram in northern Nigeria. A Boko Haram leader has now threatened to auction the girls as slaves. The cover of the New York Post today shows First Lady Michelle Obama holding a sign with the words she tweeted yesterday, hashtag bring back our girls. But a tweet alone won't do it. So with us to discuss what might and for some context is Comfort Arrow, Africa Program Director for the International Crisis Group, a global nonprofit committed to preventing and resolving deadly conflict. Ms. Arrow, thank you very much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
These schoolgirls, as you know, were kidnapped on April 15th. It's been 3 weeks. Do you know where they are?
There's different speculations as to whether they're deep into the forest regions of northeast Nigeria. There was speculation also as to whether they had crossed over into Cameroon. And I think there lies the dilemma in that there's no clarity either at the center or at the center of government or at the state level as to the fate of these girls, except for what the terror group has claimed in terms of their location.
And one of the things that the terror group is claiming is that they might auction the girls into slavery. Is it clear to you that that is their actual plan or that they even have the capacity to do such a thing?
It's not clear, but the group, in the form of its leader, Abubakar Shekau, has been making these claims through video. He's putting forward a very effective communication, saying we'll sell them, we'll have mass marriages, we'll trade them in for different gains as well. So they are winning so far. Unfortunately, the media war in terms of stoking up fear and anxiety for the families concerned.
Although it's those kinds of provocative statements that are ginning up the media reaction around the world as well.
Yeah.
And now the U.S. has sent in what the White House calls a military team. But as I understand it, this military team is not there for military action. And it's hardly a team. It's less than 10 people. Here is Colonel Steve Warren, a Pentagon spokesman, explaining the group and the mission.
We're looking at this as a crisis response to a hostage situation. These personnel will be experts in areas to include communications, logistics, intelligence, all of the functionalities that we believe will be helpful. Their purpose here is to coordinate with the Nigerian government and assess what assistance we can provide them.
Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren, Comfort Arrow from the International Crisis Group. How symbolic is this team, in your view, as opposed to action-oriented?
I can't overstate the deep terrain, the vast nature of the terrain that they'll be expected to search. I can't overemphasize how porous the borders are, and I think a number of issues, a number of concerns will be raised about how far and how deep. But the assistance is significant insofar as this is the first time really that we've got this kind of global action, and it's taken a tragedy like this to raise a degree of outrage that is forcing the government to act and that is bringing a number of international actors together. But I should stress, this is not the first time we've seen U.S. Bilateral assistance to help Nigeria deal with ongoing counterterrorism. But what we would say is that it has to be a comprehensive approach. A military response will not be sufficient. The Americans have made that clear, and that we need to do a lot of hearts and mind and working with communities who are deeply traumatized by what is going on now.
And your group, the International Crisis Group, is dedicated to preventing deadly conflict. But in terms of the immediate crisis, trying to get back these 200-plus girls, Would you like to see a military search and rescue operation, or do you think that would just put the girls and maybe other innocent people in more danger?
There are several tools and mechanisms that will be important. There has to be some kind of strategy, surveillance, intelligence, to find out where these girls are. You cannot use a military operation in that sense to take out, to bring back the girls home, because we don't know what that would yield to. Would that do more harm to them? But clearly there has to be a coordinated surveillance stroke intelligence gathering to locate them, but make sure that in an attempt to bring them back home, to release them, that we don't put them in harm's way. There are a number of them, and they're already deeply traumatized. The families are deeply anguished as to what is going on today. So, and we've made it very clear that what we've seen in the last four years has been a heavy-handed military approach to dealing with counterterrorism, and that hasn't yielded much dividends for the country.
Listeners, what would you like to see done to rescue these 200-plus girls from Boko Haram in Nigeria? Or anything else you would say or ask our guest, Comfort Arrow, Africa Program Director for the International Crisis Group, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So many of you are now focused on and anguished about these girls, even if you weren't aware of the original kidnappings when they happened 3 weeks ago. What do you want to say? What do you want to ask? What do you want to see done? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And time matters here, right, Ms. Arrow? Here is a concern about the slow pace of world and Nigerian government response from U.S. Congresswoman Barbara Lee of California.
We believe that if the girls are not found, they may already be in places like Cameroon, Benin, Chad, and other places where this thug can hide these girls.
So, Comfort Arrow, do you think that would actually protect the kidnappers going across the border, or might it make them more vulnerable to an international manhunt as global outrage mounts?
Well, I think it may even put the group, Boko Haram, at a back footing. We don't know how they will react. What we know in the last 4 years is that they have pursued a more dangerous kind of tactics. We've watched them. They've gone up. They've assassinated politicians. They've hit out at the state structure. They've gone for circular schools. They've gone for health workers, for teachers. It's very indiscriminate attacks against innocent civilians. So that is the nature of the entity that we're dealing with. So we have to proceed with a lot of care and caution. Yes, we need surveillance. Yes, we need intelligence. But at the same time, we have to move forward in a way that we don't do more harm. We don't know how deep or how far they are into Cameroon, if they are there. We don't know what has happened to whether they're all in the same grouping or whether they've been divided and moved around to different places. So at the end of the day, those who are knowledgeable with dealing with kidnappings and hostage crisis of this nature will have to take particular care, because they are young girls at the end of the day, and again, we can't even begin to imagine the deep trauma that these young girls are facing.
Let's take a phone call. Cece in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Cece.
Hello, your guests. Are they Muslim, your guests?
Does it matter?
Yes, because why aren't Muslims saying something about this?
Well, first of all, you call the Muslims intentionally to be hostile, so I think I'll leave that there. However, Comfort Arrow from the International Crisis Group, what is the international response like among Muslims, organized or unorganized? I mean, the New York Times today reports on Boko Haram alienating even Al-Qaeda, which it claims affiliation with, for the casual nature of its violence against civilians. So how would you describe Boko Haram's place in the world of radical Islam? And what about the organized, and you know, obviously 99% of the Muslims in our listening audience are absolutely incensed by this. You know, there's no doubt to Cece's concern. We open the phones when there are terrorist attacks that take place in the name of Islam. And, you know, the phones are flooded with New York, New Jersey, Connecticut Muslims absolutely outraged about what those few radicals are doing to their religion and in the name of their religion. But how about an organized response? What do you see?
I mean, what we've seen in the last 2 weeks, in the last month, is a kind of collective action that we haven't seen either within Nigeria or internationally for an insurgency that's been going on for 4 years. Let's make it very clear. Boko Haram is pursuing a campaign that crosses religious lines. They are going after those who they consider to be un-Muslim, even within the Muslim camps. They're going after those who they claim not to be pursuing a pure agenda of whatever their ideology they espouse. They're going after Muslim clerics, those that they see as reformers. So this is not targeting a Christian. This is not targeting anybody who doesn't, anybody who's seen as counter them. Anybody who's seen as critical of them is subject to targeting. So I think one of the myths that we try to break, even in our reporting that came out at the top end of last month, was that Boko Haram, you know, doesn't belong to any specific religious entity. This is not a North-South conflict. This is not a Christian-Muslim conflict. Every civilian, innocent civilian, in the northern territories and beyond has been affected by this insurgency over the last 4 years.
And there certainly has been reporting in the last day of a big protest. Big picture in front, on the front cover of the New York Times today is of a protest against Boko Haram in Nigeria. Who is participating in those protests?
Ordinary citizens. You've got, for the first time in the last 4 years, you've seen Nigerians coming together, holding hands together. These are ordinary civilians of different kinds of makeup of identity. You've got people in Kano, you've got people in Ibadan, you've got people in Lagos, you've got people in the northern regions of Nigeria, you've got people in Abuja who have come together because of the tragedy. But the incident around the girls is a manifestation of a deeper and profound threat that has been affecting Nigeria for the last 4 years. And it's taken this kind of event to enable Nigerians to come together. And it's a significant step, and maybe out of this strategy we may come up with a more comprehensive response by the government, but it must be led by the government, working hand in hand with the local communities that are affected, working hand in hand with the state level, and working hand in hand with the region, because the region has been impacted. Both Niger and Cameroon are locked into this process as well because of the porous borders, because of the forced conscription that we're seeing across the border. And the role of the international community is vital in helping Nigeria implement its own approach to dealing with this. And it announced that approach in March. We should back that approach and help them begin to put flesh, meaningful resources behind their own soft approach to dealing with counterterrorism and with dealing with socioeconomic challenges and governance in northern Nigeria.
Malik in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Malik.
Good morning, sir. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to stress a point I think that is very important to Muslims around the world. There's an earlier call of the lady that was saying why Muslims have not been saying anything. Or even Brian yourself, you call Boko Haram an Islamic radical group. I would just call them a terrorist organization or a radical organization. But what they're doing, what they have been doing, like any other terrorist organization, Al Qaeda, has nothing to do with Islam. Their action, their thinking, and I think when people try to associate the action of few with the more than 1 billion Muslims around the world, that doesn't solve the problem. It's complicated, and it keeps fueling the anti-Muslim attitude. I will stress it again: as somebody who was born Muslim, raised Muslim, these people around the globe They're doing their own thing, their own agenda, that absolutely has nothing to do with Islam. And there are prominent Muslim leaders around the world who stress that and will continue to stress that. These are losers. These are Mekran people, non-believers, and they just, you know, doing harm to a great religion. I think that needs to be emphasized more.
Malik, thank you very much. Comfort Arrow, go ahead. But I will add, when he says he doesn't like even me referring to them as radical Islamists, I mean, they say they do this in the name of Islam, don't they?
They say that they do this in the name of Islam, but we should also be careful as to how we label and identify these groups. Most northern Nigerians, especially in Borneo, Maiduguri, where Boko Haram's supposedly originated from, who are exposed or who have been exposed to the radical Islam, are not violent extremists. So this is a very small minority group, and some radical Islamic groups have exploited the vast poverty and marginalization that has characterized part of Nigeria, part of the north. But Boko Haram is also a manifestation of the history of political violence that we've seen in Nigeria and the mobilization of various groupings and the misuse and abuse of those who have been marginalized and alienated over time. So Nigeria is not unfamiliar to extremist or fringe groups that instrumentalize violence to achieve their own goals. And they do this within an army of militants to produce an effect. And that is exactly what Boko Haram has done. You know, you'll find a few hundred groupings, loyal, unwavering leaders and members, and that is what Boko Haram has become in the last 4 years.
You know, the Times today described the origin of the name Boko Haram, which we've been hearing translates to Western education is a sin. That's the usual shorthand for the translation, which sounds so backwards in its implications. Western education is a sin. But the origin, according to the Times, had to do with the few elites from Nigeria who would go off mostly to the UK to be educated, then come back and join a small ruling class of people like them who then ruled over the impoverished North, often harshly, from the capital. And ending the tyranny of that elite was the point of the name, because it was associated with Western education, quote unquote. Do you agree that that's the history? And has it changed to be something more globally anti-education?
Well, what we try to talk about is the evolution and the emergence of this group that emerged in the early 2000s. And yes, certainly, when the original leader, Muhammad Yusuf, came out, it was a rejection of secular authority. It was a rejection of what they had seen at the center of government in Nigeria. Yes, they did talk of wanting a more purist vision of Islam based on Sharia. But over time, through its alliance and through its mobilization by various political groupings, the group has emerged to become a more dangerous political tool used by those who are seeking office, also to use them to mobilize and pursue political acts. So the story of Boko Haram is very much intertwined with politicians and wealthy businessmen from prominent political elite groupings in northern Nigeria and elsewhere. It's not an unfamiliar story of the link between militant groupings, criminal elements and thugs, and politicians seeking to make gain electorally or in terms of winning power as well.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we talk about the crisis of the 200-plus kidnapped girls in Nigeria and the rising global response, and also getting some deeper context from our guest, Comfort Arrow, Africa Program Director for the International Crisis Group, a global nonprofit committed to preventing and resolving deadly conflict. And our phones are entirely full. Kehinde in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Kehinde.
Hello, good morning.
Hi there. Are you originally from Nigeria, I gather?
I am originally from Nigeria.
And what would you like to say?
Yeah, this issue of Boko Haram is the product of the failure in the system on the part of the leadership. They were formally recruited as political thugs, but they went out of hand. And at the same time, we can say they are product of injustice that the leadership have perpetrated against the followership in Nigeria. When they're supposed to do what is right for the citizen to make life meaningful for them, they were running after their own personal ego. That notwithstanding, Boko Haram today has become a punishment for everybody, both Muslims and Christians in Nigeria, because they are just killing anyhow they like. And they don't have no ideology to pinpoint that, okay, this is what they want. It is unfortunate that the present government in Nigeria is a complete failure. It took the president almost 14 days to comment, to make a comment on this issue that is boiling. And when you look at the military is completely disoriented. Sometime ago, the government know where these people are, in the Sambisa Forest. Sambisa Forest is a park, was formerly a park, but due to the fact that corruption has eaten deep into the polity.
So Kehinde, are you calling more for a tougher government military response to try to rescue the girls? Or are you saying also that in terms of root causes, that the world needs to intervene to stop Nigerian government oppression in the north as well in order to change hearts and minds on Boko Haram?
Yes, the world leaders must, it has not become a world issue, either I would like it or not. The world leaders should put pressure on the Nigerian government to tackle this issue as it should be. Look at the way the American government tackled the issue of Al-Qaeda. And Al-Qaeda is into oblivion now. So the government of Nigeria should do the same. They should equip the military with modern and sophisticated military equipment, not just outdated and barbaric equipment.
So you want to see more military action against Boko Haram by the Nigerian government. And Kehinde, thank you very much. And Comfort Arrow, when we did our last segment on these kidnapped girls a few days ago, we had other calls like that from Nigerian expats now in the New York area who are frustrated that the government has been so militarily passive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, the irony is that in the last four years, the one consistent focus by the government has been a heavy-handed military response, and it hasn't yielded much significant dividends. So we say that you need a comprehensive approach, that, yes, there has to be a mixture of military weight behind this, but you need a political approach. You need also a clear governance development approach, and we come up with a series of recommendations in our own reporting that says you've got to come up with a more holistic, comprehensive approach that focuses on the socioeconomic political reforms, that focus on naming and shaming and prosecuting those involved in these crimes.
Yes.
Not only just on the Boko Haram side, but on the security side, that you need to build up the police force so that they can play their role. Yes, there are short-term measures that have to be taken. Yes, there are concerns that the government hasn't appeared to provide a coherent strategy, and it has taken something as tragic as this, unfortunately, to mobilize the government. What has been missing for so long in the last 4 years is a collective political will at the center of government and at the state level to take seriously the profound threat that this group characterizes.
Yeah.
Can we find that going forward? We hope that we can get that. We hope that there's been enough outrage to affect the thinking of government going forward.
Yes, that's very interesting. Especially because there seems to be a kind of twin outrage on the part of so many Nigerians. On the one hand, the lack of forceful and effective military action against Boko Haram. On the other hand, as you say, when they have done things, there have been massacres, there have been mass arrests, so heavy-handed that they don't disarm Boko Haram, and they also alienate the population and give Boko Haram a recruiting tool. I think it's important before you go that we also mention the offshoot horror in another part of Nigeria this week. Hundreds of civilians were killed, and apparently the whole town of Gamboro and Gala was burned to the ground by Boko Haram members after the military personnel in the town had left to join the search for the schoolgirls.
Yeah.
Is Boko Haram that murderously opportunistic?
Yes. And that's become the nature of its own activities. We've seen how it's evolved and expanded its remit originally from Borno State to now four deeply affected states in northern Nigeria. We saw how they moved into Jos and Plateau State back in 2010, 2011, ahead of the elections. And I think our biggest fear is as Nigeria comes into election year next year, if we don't deal with this in a comprehensive way, that there will be more exploitation by the group and others. I mean, the twin problem or the triple problem for Nigeria, corruption, bad governance, and political violence is what we're seeing now. And we need to find a comprehensive way. It's a combination of both a political settlement and a military solution. Of course, it's hard to settle with a radical group that doesn't want to engage in deep dialogue. But there are reform elements in the north, and we have to work with various communities in northern Nigeria and other partners right across Nigeria to deal with the crisis. And hopefully the tragedy that this situation represents may generate some hard thinking by the federal government.
And so there's the deeper analysis, the longer-term picture. But in the meantime, these 200 girls are kidnapped and the world wants them back now. On our website, Robert writes, I know this sounds terrible, but if they're going to auction them as slaves, why don't we just send someone to buy the girls to ensure their safety? Ha, ha, ha. But what can be done over the next few days, literally few days, as world attention mounts and the comprehensive solution that you call for in the long run obviously will take years? What needs to be done right now, and what do you think will happen over the next few days?
I mean, it's hard to tell. It's a fast-evolving picture. At the top of this week, we already heard that there were more girls abducted as well. Look, I think what the U.S. and the U.K. and France and other international donors are wanting to do right now is significant. I think working hand in hand with Nigeria to use helicopter gunships to survey the area is an important. What we have to do is be very careful that this doesn't backfire and this doesn't do more harm than good. So as the international community seeks to provide assistance, we have to tread carefully because the worst case scenario, it's unimaginable right now, but we have to be very careful in how we pursue the next stage of this process. And after we've dealt with that, then the more medium to long-term issues that we've discussed become more relevant. But right now, how we work with Nigeria, the military, the police, border security, and different strands of intelligence internationally will be very, very important to reverse in what we've seen in the last month.
Comfort Arrow, Africa Program Director for the International Crisis Group, a global nonprofit committed to preventing and resolving deadly conflict. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, what will the New York City teachers contract mean for hundreds of thousands of other municipal workers, for city taxpayers, and for the teachers who we are being told are probably going to vote overwhelmingly yes, but are in many cases less than enthusiastic? Stay with us.